Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, running down Santa Claus' lane. Blitzen, blitzen, all here's a reindeer pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children's ear all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus come tonight.
And welcome to Rod Talk here on M88, the show where we always want to challenge you, encourage you, and most of all, get you to think. And we got a interesting topic to get to tonight, so we're just going to pretty much dive right in, if that's okay with you. With us, we have Tammy Bergen, right?
That's right.
She was on during Halloween, if you remember, a former Wiccan, now a Christian and a Jew. And she's joining us tonight to talk a little bit about the pagan roots of Christmas. And also joining us is a guy that I have a lot of respect for. I work on his show, Scott Richards Live. I don't know if you've caught it, Tammy.
Yeah.
It's a great show. And I've learned a lot. I push buttons for his show. But I've learned a lot from him in the few months that I've been working with him. I think he's a great resource for something like this. And honestly, if you ever have questions about the Bible, he's a great resource to turn to. Scott Richards Live on our sister station, KNKT. And Pastor Scott Richards was kind enough to join us tonight. So thank you very much for doing that, Scott.
Hey, great to be here, yo.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And we're here to talk about Christmas. Next Sunday, Christmas Eve, it's one of my favorite times of year, but in my time as a Christian, I've also become aware that Christmas isn't necessarily all that it might seem to be, and a lot of Christians are unaware of that. And so tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about the pagan roots of Christmas, and then kind of discuss, well, what does that mean for us as Christians? Now, the genesis of this was actually sparked by you, Tammy, when we were talking around Halloween time about, you know, the pagan roots of that holiday, and we kind of discussed, is it redeemable, is it not redeemable? And you said something that I thought was just a great point, where you pointed out, you know, for you, because of your background as a former Wiccan, you have a strong conviction that you just can't have any association with holidays that have any sort of pagan connections, because for you, that could be a stumbling block to celebrate anything that's even remotely connected to your former past as a Wiccan. And I thought, man, what a great point of view to, you know, I mean, that can be a tough decision for some people to make, because Christmas is such a, you know, Christian thing, especially, you know, maybe not in the world, it's kind of commercial, but within the church, you know, to say, oh no, I can't because of its pagan roots, you know, I'm sure a lot of Christians are like, are you crazy? But I thought that was a great point. So I want to kick off tonight with you and talk a little bit about not just for you, but why you think perhaps some of these pagan roots may or may not be something that Christians should consider about whether or not they should or should not celebrate some of the traditions of Christmas. You know, we understand the danger for you. Does that extend to people who don't have that similar background as you?
Well, that's really up to them to decide between them and God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a decision that I have any right to make. If they feel that their background, like mine, would lead them astray if they began to invest emotionally or spiritually very heavily in Christmas or Easter or any of the other sanitized pagan holidays, then obviously that's not a good thing for them to do if it's a stumbling block. If it's not a stumbling block, for example, the gentleman that is currently courting me is Catholic. For him, it's not a stumbling block. It doesn't mean anything for him. And that's fine. There's no problem with that. But you should be informed. You should know where everything is coming from. Even if it's okay for you to do it, you should still know, because there are people out there who don't know. There are people out there who you may encounter, like the cashier at Walmart, who is a pagan and knows the pagan holiday roots, and says, well, why are, if you're a Christian, why are you celebrating a pagan holiday? You better have an answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my particular take. It's not for me to say one way or the other for anybody to do one thing or not to do another. That's between them and God.
Now, Scott, let me ask you, on the flip side, what do you think about this idea of Christians celebrating something that does have pagan roots? Is there anything there that you think would give us pause, or why do you think it's something that Christians just don't even think about?
Well, I would thoroughly agree with Tammy's point of view in that whatever decision you're going to make, to celebrate or not celebrate, it should be an informed and intelligent decision. You know, people should know what the roots are and what the issues are so that they can do it. And, you know, rather than just saying, well, gee, you know, I've always watched a Charlie Brown Christmas every year. What could be wrong? You know, not that I'm rapping a Charlie Brown Christmas, but, you know, that's probably the most theological statement that you're going to find this time of year on the media. But, you know, we've got to have a deeper reason, either yes or no, for all of this. And, you know, again, I deeply respect where Tammy is coming from and the background that she's had. However, I do think that there's another issue that we need to take to heart as Christians, and that is for one time during the year, and I mean, I speak as a pastor of a church here in Tucson, for one time out of the year, maybe two, there are wide open doors for even the most, well, hard-hearted and crusty among us to, well, maybe even, you know, entertain the idea of darkening the door of a church. And it's not the 4th of July, and it's not Halloween, and, you know, it's not President's Day. It's Christmas. And, you know, from where I was coming from in my background, being raised in a home where my dad essentially raised us to be atheists. He felt religion was fine if, you know, you were a little old lady or had trouble sleeping at night. But, you know, for those of you who are out there and capable, you don't need that sort of stuff. It's just a crutch. I think we went to church five times I can remember growing up, but every single time coincided with a holiday. And even during that time, it would seem that my dear old dad would kind of get a little sentimental, soften a little bit. You know, the Christmas carols would get start being played around the house and things along this line. And, you know, I remember that after I became a Christian. And in my family, one of the times where I could really encourage my family, weren't interested really in spiritual things, oh, to come on out, you know, come on out to church. It would be Christmas. They would be willing to do that because of the tradition. And because of that, there is an open door for evangelism, for ministry, and I think it would be an oversight for us not to make the most of the days, so to speak, make the most of opportunities, for the days are evil. I have no doubt that there's an awful lot of things that blind us to the true meaning of the gospel around Christmas time, the crash commercialism for one, on a material sense, and the pagan overlays of all this and another. But let's not miss that opportunity either. And so that would be, I guess, the counterpoint to Tammy's point. How can we best take advantage of this in a way that does use, in a sense, the key to the culture to reach hearts?
I don't really consider that a counterpoint. I think it's an excellent, incredibly valid point. And it's one that is... I agree. It should be taken advantage of. I don't think that Christians should go out there and say, well, for certain, absolutely, no doubt about it, this was the birth of Christ, because there's a lot of question about that.
And we'll get into that.
But at the same time, absolutely, take advantage of what you're being given by God. And if this is one of those times when you can do it, then by all means, do it. Absolutely.
Well, I kind of thought that's what both of you guys would say to kick things off, and I think that's a great foundation for us to start with as we discuss this issue. And now let's get a little bit more specific. Now, I was given an article by one of my coworkers, Sam, which was really interesting, and it went through this whole thing. It was about a pastor who was talking about, oh, no, Christians should not celebrate Christmas, and he quoted a passage from Isaiah 44. It talks about trees and putting stuff on the tree and so on and so forth, and he made the connection. And then he made the connection, you know, we decorate trees and blah, 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 and then we fall down before them as we slide the presents around. You know, it's like, it's all idolatry, you shouldn't get into this, and so on and so forth. You know, and I see that. It's like, interesting, but maybe extreme, but still, it is something to consider. And so that's what we're here to do tonight. And just let me make it clear for everyone listening, this isn't by no means a debate. You know, I'm not interested on debates on Raw Talk. But what we are interested in is presenting you two sides of an issue and letting you decide. And that's always what we strive to do on this program, even when we've talked about intelligent design and creationism and all that type of stuff. And, you know, we're not here to debate issues. We're here to talk about them and let you make your conclusion based on good information provided from several points of view, and hopefully that's what you will get out of tonight's show. Now, let's talk a little bit specifically, starting with Tammy, and then we'll come to Scott, and we'll chat with him a little bit how about all this became a Christian thing. But what are some of the pagan roots of Christmas that people might not be, you know, terribly aware of so far as, like, things that we all enjoy? Christmas trees, holly, mistletoe, you know, any of those types of things. Where do these things come from?
Okay, I'll try not to be too graphic.
Okay, I appreciate that.
The Yule log is Germanic in origin, and it most of the Christian traditions that go along with Christmas, I shouldn't say Christian traditions, but most of the traditions that go along with Christmas are pagan in origin. The Yule log is Germanic. It's commonly accepted amongst pagans to be phallic, but that's not historically and archaeologically proven. There is the Christmas tree itself, which a lot of people confuse in understanding. They think that Jeremiah 10, verses 2 through
4.
They think that that's what it's referring to, and mm-hmm. it's not. It's referring to the making of idols.
Mm-hmm.
The Christmas tree itself is, it's questionable. It could be English in origin, Anglo-Saxon, or it could be Germanic. Either way, they were of the Germanic tribes. So it pretty much comes from that, and it does predate, Yeshua's birth.
Now, with the tree, real quick, because I read something while we were doing this that I thought was fascinating. I just wanted you to confirm. I was reading that one of the traditions along with the tree was the hanging of sacrificial animals on the tree to ward off evil spirits or do whatever. Have you heard of that before?
That's a new one.
No, yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, that was something in the reams of research that was given to me by our researcher, Julie, which I thought was absolutely fascinating, that one of the things that they did is they, put... animals that had been sacrificed and hung them from the tree.
That's very, there's very little in the pagan movement that I wouldn't doubt has happened. They do a lot of very odd things. The lights on the Christmas tree were originally candles, and they were there for the, some people say that it was a reflection of the Judaic tradition of Hanukkah, or Chanukah, if you prefer. Which was the Feast of Lights and the dedication of the temple. By the way, this is the either second or third day of Hanukkah, depending on how you choose to look at it. So happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah to you as well.
That brings me to one thing I need to clarify. I'm not, we're not sure that I'm actually Jewish. It's questionable at this time.
Okay.
We're pretty sure, but not 100% sure, but I do practice Messianic Judaism because it's the closest thing that I could find that did not have, pagan holidays in it.
It
has Jewish holidays in it, which have no pagan roots at all.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
For you.
The other holidays, the affixing, or not the other holidays, but the other traditions of it, putting lights around the houses, candelarias, I think that's what they're called, the paper bags on fire.
Yeah. Yep. Candelarias, luminarias.
Thank you. Luminarias. That's the one.
Lots of different names.
That, I understand, comes from the New Covenant. And referring to lighting up the way so that Yeshua, when he comes back, will know where to look to find someone. That's, I understand, the tradition to go along with that. I don't know how pagan that is, but it's certainly not something that I would consider necessarily true because Yeshua knows who his people are. He knows who's saved. He doesn't need any lights to light his way. He's not an airplane jet pilot landing a jet.
Mistletoe.
It was used as a... Thank you for running down a list for me. I need a list.
I'm here to help out.
Mistletoe is... the reason the kissing under the mistletoe is going on is because it's a fertility rite. It was particularly prized by the Druids who would go up into the top of an oak tree and pull it down from there or cut it specifically with a sacrificial knife, which you will often see on the altar of a Catholic church. There's a number of accoutrements that the Catholic Church uses that are used in paganism. White berries were often thought of as the semen. The red berries were often thought of as the blood of the menstrual blood. So it was very much a fertility symbol, and it was basically to ensure that you would have many kids, because back then, if you didn't have a lot of kids, you weren't going to survive into old age.
Right.
And give me another one.
Holly, the boughs of holly.
The Holly King. out of Druidism, Dritakt and Ban Dritakt. It was known as the Holly King. The Holly King would take over at this time of year, actually on the winter solstice, and he would reign for half a year, and then after he reigned, the Oak King reigned, also known as the Green Man, also known as Robin Hood.
I just read a new book about Robin Hood. It's very good.
There's other traditions that go along with it, the eating of candies and various foods and the wonderful sin of gluttony that I happen to particularly enjoy around Thanksgiving.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Those came from, again, very similar to the Halloween giving of gifts in Saturnalia, the worship of Saturn, which mm-hmm. fell around this time.
Which was a Roman tradition, wasn't it? The Saturnalia mm-hmm. was something that the Romans did,
yeah.
and so on and so forth.
Exactly, and they were still doing it at the time that Yeshua was born.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, I refer to Jesus as Yeshua because that was his name.
Yes, it was. What about ivy? Is that the same as holly?
No, ivy, there's two forms of ivy. There's the
poison ivy?
Yeah, there's the poisonous version, and then there's the non-poisonous version. Many ivies will change color right around this time of year. And when they change color, they very often turn a deep red, which was, again, reminiscent of the menstrual blood of the Queen of the Night. In fact, there's even a song, the Queen of the Night aria, that is a very popular song, or at least amongst those of us who like classical music.
So, what about, I've heard, again, this is stuff that I've read, and, you know, I remember things I've read. I couldn't cite sources for you. Don't have a photographic memory, so I'm sorry if I don't have the source. But I remember reading that there's a lot of druidic connections to some of this.
Quite a bit.
So far as celebrating the winter solstice and whatnot, like there's a
yes.
druidic connection to the holly, to the Christmas tree.
Yes.
And so can you
all
elaborate
those.
On that?
They're all fertility symbols as far as the druids or the Dritakt or the Ban Dritakt are concerned. And I apologize if my Gaelic is not pronounced absolutely correctly.
You do fine.
Doing my best here.
You do great.
The Druidic religion is very much a fertility religion. And being that it is a fertility religion, speaking from the inside, I can tell you that the all of these things, the Christmas tree itself is a phallic symbol. The Yule log is a phallic symbol. The everything connected with it has some relation to sex.
Anything sacrificial along with these, you know, so far as the tree goes? Or?
Well, the tree itself is sacrificed,
mm-hmm.
and the druids worship trees.
Right.
So that in and of itself right there, they would often perform a rite around the tree that was to be sacrificed. Usually it was one tree that was sacrificed and placed in the middle of a village.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, well, there's a little bit of a plethora of some of the things that we celebrate at Christmas that have pagan backgrounds. I don't know if anyone's uncomfortable by some of that. I thought that was pretty fascinating. Now, Scott, turning to you, I know you've been dying to talk here as Tammy's been elaborating on this.
Actually, it's been a fascinating listen.
Well, good. Now it's your turn. Why don't you talk a little bit about how Christmas has become, or, you know, according to how cynical you might be, at least used to be, very much associated with Christianity. How did this transition occur where you had all these things, all these symbols that were very much part of pagan rituals and traditions, and now, or again, depending on how cynical you are, used to be very much associated with Christianity? How did this transition occur?
Well, I think the answer, is pretty simple. It's really even tied up in the word Christmas. It comes from two words, Christus Masse, which meant the Mass of Christ. There's no doubt about the fact that Christmas as we know it today was greatly influenced by the Roman Catholic Church. In fact, because of the association with having a special Mass at this time, a number of the reformers really spoke out very adamantly against the idea of celebrating Christmas because it tended to bring people back to the idea of the Mass where the priest would reoffer the sacrifice of Christ on the cross during the time of communion. In this light, you know, I think it is kind of a fascinating historical insight that can explain an awful lot of well, maybe some of the cultural challenges we face in sharing the gospel today. In that, from a very early period of time, the Roman Catholic Church, in terms of its evangelistic outreach, had a very interesting sort of a philosophical mindset. In a sense, it was almost like if you can't beat them, join them as much as you can. When they would go into another area, for instance, they would find, say, certain idols, certain pagan deities and what have you, and they would Christianize them. They would say, well, you can go ahead and worship this, you know, this female deity here, but instead of calling it, you know, whatever the local name was, you can go ahead and call it Mary, and so these things would be Christianized. This tendency, you know, is really evident in the fact that we have Christmas today. You know, prior to early in the fourth century, the big holiday during this time of year was the holiday of Saturnalia, and essentially it would coincide with the shortest day of the year. It was a celebration because in the pagan culture, and I'm sure Tammy can verify a lot of this, it meant that this was as dark as things were going to get, and better days were ahead. So you kind of hit bottom this time of year. You could look forward to spring being not that far off. At least there was some smidgen of hope along that line. December 25th coincided with a day which was used for the birth of the sun god Phrygia in a culture in the ancient Balkans, for instance. And so when the Roman Catholic Church would encounter these things, rather than saying, no, don't have anything to do with it, let's do away with this, well, you know, let's see if we can Christianize this thing. And so December 25th essentially became co-opted with the idea of the birth of the Savior. Now, there's no evidence whatsoever that the early church ever celebrated the birth of Jesus, really at all, commemorating it. And there's a reason for that. We really just don't know from the scriptures when Jesus was born. In fact, there's persuasive, at least in my mind, evidence in the book of Luke, chapter 2, that Jesus was born about 4 B.C. We can't even get the date right on our calendar. You know, that dovetails with the time Quirinius was governor of Syria, as mentioned there. Also, Herod the Great died about 4 B.C., so if he was part of the slaughter of the innocents and the meeting with the Magi, it would have had to have been at least 4 B.C. Some people even peg it back to 6 B.C. or even earlier. So, you know, as far as nailing down a date is concerned, a lot of people are surprised at that because they just assume this is Jesus' birthday. But we also see a reference in the book of Luke, the famous line about the shepherds abiding in the fields, keeping watch over their flocks by night. Well, this would indicate that at the very least it was springtime, maybe even later, because during winter, sheep and livestock would be carefully kept in pens because there was really no fodder for them to graze on. It would be very scarce, and it was easier to feed them and maintain them and protect them from the elements in that kind of a setting. So we really have no clue whatsoever that Jesus was born about this time. And in essence, what this was a way of saying, well, we can't seem to work this festival of Saturnalia out of the hearts of people, so let's make the best of it. Let's call this the birthday of Jesus. We'll just focus on that, and we'll go on from there. And so we have what we have here today.
You know, yeah, go ahead, Tammy. You're going to make a comment about the shepherd thing, weren't you?
Well, yeah, but a couple of other things, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
The shepherd thing, you're absolutely right. It does not pin down his birth date. A lot of people, especially even Messianic Jews, assume that it is Sukkot, the Festival of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Tabernacles, when Yeshua was born. But there is no evidence to support it. You're absolutely right. It may have been a easy winter. It may have been a time when there had been a lot of rain and it was an Indian summer, if you want to call it that. It may have been a lot of different things. There may have been a lot of influences to cause the Israelites to not remove their sheep at that time. So you're right. There is no way to know for certain. There's two other theories that a lot of people don't know of for choosing the date of the 25th. One is that it's Mithras' birthday, And now I've read that, but and I've read it in several places, but since the Gregorian calendar was brought out well after Yeshua was born, I don't know how accurate that is.
Explain Mithras.
Mithras was one of the ancient gods who was bullheaded. He was worshipped prior to Christ very, very popularly, even amongst the Celts, the Gaels. He was very popular across the Roman Empire. Another thought is, and this is something that I've just recently heard, and it's something that makes a lot of sense. 2 days ago was the 25th of Kislev in the Israeli calendar. And it may be that the Roman Catholic Church, in order to bow down a little bit to the Messianic Jews who were in preponderance at that time or existing at that time, they may have chosen the 25th of December in order to bow down to them with the 25th of Kislev. Obviously, the Judaic calendar can vary from year to year because it follows the moons instead of the sun. But that's just something that was brought out to me just recently, and I've thought about that, and it does coincide with the Hanukkah festival, and that, I thought that was rather interesting. Just a thought.
I think everyone's a little warm fuzzy for Christmas is like being shattered right about now.
Yeah.
What? Listening to this! Christmas suddenly isn't so cool! We'll go ahead, and if you got a question or opinion that you want to jump in with, now's the time to do it. 505-338-5790. Give us a call if you have a question about what we're discussing, a question for Scott or for Tammy about this topic. Let us know what you have to say. Scott, I love the comment about Jesus was probably born 4 BC. But doesn't BC represent before Christ? So Jesus he was born 4 years before Christ. How does that work? Wow. Now, let me ask you both, as we have some people calling in, so try and keep your answers a little bit short here. But with this whole idea of if you can't beat them, join them, how is it that the church doesn't see that as a compromise, that we would be willing to co-opt these pagan traditions and make them a part of the church when with something like Halloween, you know, like, oh, can't touch that. We don't want to co-opt that because it would be a compromise, which is, you know, a very big concern around Halloween. We don't want to compromise our beliefs. We don't want to compromise, you know, what we worship, blah, 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 around Halloween. And yet, historically, isn't that basically what's happened with Christmas?
Ah, well, I would have to agree that it is what has happened historically with Christmas. I have to say that since there are holidays out there that are not pagan in origin at all, and there is a form of worship that is out there that is not pagan at all, I personally find myself gravitating toward that because God has called me there. Whether or not that is right for other people, I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
That's not for me to say. That's between them and God. I can see good points. I can see bad points to it. For me personally and for my family, it is not the right thing to do.
Scott, what do you think?
Well, you know, once again, like we said at the outset, you know, I believe that we should seize each and every opportunity we have to share the gospel. Yeah, how we got into this situation historically really doesn't hold a whole lot of water. And you know, obviously, along with the seeming desire of our culture to exterminate every mention of even Christmas at this point from our vocabulary, I really think that, you know, once again, we've got to look at the fact that although it may have started out from, well, as you say, maybe a move of compromise or an attempt to redirect the fervor that people had for a certain celebration in a more positive way, depending on your point of view. It is what it is right now, to use that overwhelmed phrase. Mm-hmm. And we are in the cultural situation we're in right now. And it is a golden opportunity to be able to say to people, did you know there's more to the Christmas story than, you know, singing Christmas carols, putting up lights, and drinking eggnog. Now, I don't know if eggnog has pagan roots, but that's
gotta
be the silliest name for a drink I've ever heard in my life.
That's because it's Gaelic.
That, I think, is the point that we've got to come back to. How can we make the most of it, seeing that this is the situation that we're in? And if we can point people to the fact that God sent Yeshua to be born of a virgin, born under the law, that he might redeem us from the curse of the law, that this wasn't just a nice little thing that can be captured in a plastic nativity scene, well, then we've got an opportunity to reach people's hearts. That's, I think, where we got to keep it.
We have on the line with us Alyssa. Alyssa, welcome to Rod Talk, and what do you have to say?
I don't know. I just really have a problem with Christmas because it's just that we, the culture we live in, we just, like, tend to follow, you know, whatever people feed to us. And it really bothers me that I grew up, like, with a Christmas tree in my house and, like, doing all these traditions that, like, that don't have any, like, basis, you know, like, any biblical basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, as a church, don't we have a responsibility to teach people what's right, not just what everybody else knows?
Interesting question. Scott or Tammy, do you have a response to that?
I do.
Well, I'll jump in where angels fear to tread. You know, I'm sorry that you had that kind of negative experience. But once again, you know, the symbols of the season that are prevalent in our day and age, I guess we can take them one way or the other. You know, again, if your conscience is reflective of Tammy's point of view, then by all means, you know, don't go with the flow. You know, I think God will honor you for having that kind of steadfast commitment before him. If on the other side of the coin we want to take something and redeem it, in a sense bring Christ into the middle of it, you know, I just read a marvelous application of this from the Answers in Genesis website, where they said, you know, the fact that there's Christmas trees around right now is a great illustration and a great entree into talking about the fact that trees and had a huge impact on where we are as people, and will have a huge impact on where we're going in the future. It was the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and disobeying God in the Garden of Eden that got us into the mess that we are in. It is the promise that one day when God has restored and redeemed his creation, including us, we will eat of the fruit of the tree of life that is in the paradise of God. And Revelation 22 describes that so beautifully. But the tree that made all that possible was the tree that Jesus hung upon. And if the presence of Christmas trees can serve as that kind of an illustration for the gospel, well, then let's point people to that.
Tammy?
Alyssa, I would say do as God is directing you to do. Follow your conscience. Follow the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. And remember to forgive. Very often people follow tradition simply because it is tradition, and they don't think in terms of is this right or is it wrong. They just do it. And very often custom has more than the force of law. And if your family did this, then try to remember the good things. I myself don't have a whole lot of good memories of Christmas in my family. I was raised by atheists who were also hippies and scientists. Go figure.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird combination. But my grandmother, on the other hand, was a Southern Baptist. And we would go to her house for Christmas every year. And I remember that one night, even to this day, I cannot sleep. I am an insomniac that night. I cannot sleep. And all that runs through my head is all these negative things. So I would encourage you to do as I do and pray that night and see if that helps you. And I'd like to go ahead and give my email address if I can. It's trappertam, TrapperTam at yahoo.com. I would also encourage you to speak to your pastor and seek his counsel in this. I don't know your personal situation, but it sounds to me as though you're very distressed about this. And I would have to say that very often Jesus is the reason for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So remember that he is your savior and he can overcome everything. He's bigger than anything in this world and he matters. Put him first in your life.
Does that help you at all, Alyssa?
Oh, I guess. But you guys don't think that the church has an obligation to not have Christmas trees in their house, not have a Christmas tree in our church, you know? If it was worshipped by pagans, don't you think the church has an obligation?
Well, I think what both Scott and Tammy are getting at is, yeah, these things have pagan roots, but as Scott pointed out, at this point, does anyone really know about that? Sure, you're hearing about it now on this show, but there's so many people who are not aware of the pagan traditions. All they know is that they're associated with a Christian holiday. Look at what happened in the airport in Seattle. Get rid of those Christmas trees because you're only representing one religion. And, of course, the assumption is the religion that's being represented is Christianity. And so those trees were taken away, and no one's, you know, complaining about, oh, no, those are pagan, blah, blah. All it's associated with at large is with Christianity. And so I think if there's any obligation on the church, the obligation of the church is to not get into entanglements over this tradition or that tradition, this symbol or that symbol. Our obligation is to say, look, Jesus Christ was born for you. We don't know what day he was born on. But we know he was a historical figure. We know that he was born. We know that he was born for you. And that is why we celebrate Christmas. We don't celebrate Christmas because of the presents or because of the tree or because of all these other trappings of the holiday. We celebrate it because of Jesus. And if there is any obligation on the church, it's to take the focus away from the symbols of the holiday and focus it on, as Tammy said, the reason for the holiday. And I think that's what, if there's any obligation, that would be what I think the obligation would be. I hope that helps you out, Alyssa. We're going to move on to another caller. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. And I understand, you know, a lot of people feel the same way. This is all meaningless. It's all just a bunch of stuff that people do because that's what they've done for years. But you know what? I think you can find that there is a lot more meaning there than you might think if you dive in and, you know, do some research on your own, like Tammy was saying. I hope that helps you out, Alyssa. You have a Merry Christmas, okay?
Okay,
thanks. All right, next we have Terry on the line. Terry, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
I think God didn't let us know the day that Jesus Christ was born, but he let us know that when Jesus Christ died, we know that he died on Good Friday, even though it's tough to say Good Friday, even though. But the thing is, he definitely wasn't born around Christmas. We all know that, and it was based on a pagan belief. It gives an opportunity for the world to, you know, thank God for the birth of his son. But I think that should be a daily thanks that we give God and not just Christmas. And that's all I have to say.
Well, that was very well said, Terry. Terry and Tammy. That was very well said. And, you know, one of the things that I've taken from my research about this whole thing with Christmas is, like, sure, the whole thing might be arbitrary, but if it is arbitrary, that just goes to show, hey, we could do this any time of the year that we want. mean, why not? Thank you very much, Terry. We appreciate
Thank
you calling
you.
In.
God
All
bless.
Right. 505-338-5790. If you have a question or opinion that you would like to add to our conversation as we talk about Christmas and its pagan roots. Scott, Tammy, are you guys familiar with the Hanging of the Green ceremony? Have you ever attended one of those?
No,
I've not.
Well, it's something that my dad was a pastor for most of my life, and one of the top people that I respect. I'm talking about him in the past tense. Sorry, Dad! He was a great pastor. He's retired now. Extremely intelligent and just had a great heart for Christ. Loved Christmas. And one of the things that we stumbled across during our travels, we were in the Air Force, was this Hanging of the Green ceremony. And what happens is during the church service, decorations are put up. The church isn't decorated at the start of the service. By the end of it, the entire church is decorated. Beautiful service. But one of the things that was always brought up in that is some of these pagan things. And he said, yeah, this started off this way. And one of my favorite stories during the Hanging of the Green ceremony was a story about how I don't remember who it was, but the first pastor who brought a tree, a Christmas tree, into a church, his congregation wanted to lynch him. You know, they were so angry that he would dare do that, bring a evergreen fir tree into a church and decorate it for Christmas. Who has ever heard of such a thing? But today it is such a precious symbol of the everlasting life that Jesus brings us. And, you know, goes on and gives all these biblical symbols that can come from all these things. And I've always loved the Hanging of the Green ceremony. It's not very common. I don't see those around a lot. They take a lot of work and planning. As a son of the pastor, I was always obligated to help out with those types of projects. but it was one that I really enjoyed. And I just wanted to encourage people, if you ever come across a Hanging of the Green ceremony at a church, check it out. It is a very fascinating experience. We have Jessica on the line. Jessica, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hi, I have a
question for Scott.
Okay.
I was in my U.S. history class, and they were talking about Santa Claus. And, well, if Jesus Christ has so much to do with Christmas, what came about with Santa Claus? Why did he replace Christ?
Well, yeah, I think the tragic thing is that Santa Claus has replaced Christ in all this. I mean, Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, it all goes back to a fairly obscure individual in early church history in the 4th century named St. Nicholas. He was a bishop in Asia Minor. And he was a martyr. He was a very generous man, but he was also known as a man that took very special care in terms of ministry to children. And so because of this, St. Nicholas was sort of venerated and associated with this and sort of co-opted into the Christmas story. Interestingly enough, as far as our culture is concerned in the United States, Santa Claus really didn't become a major focus or major feature until the publication of the famous story, A Visit from St. Nick. And that seemed to take things by storm and get things really rolling as far as having Father Christmas or Santa Claus involved with this. You know, I thoroughly agree with you. Unfortunately, bringing Santa Claus into this, you know, although it's harmless fantasy, I think, for young children, and I think people have to really measure that out, whether they're going to be a part of this or not. But I think one of the factors they've really got to take into account in all of this is, first of all, if we are associating with the birth of Christ, this absolutely mythical figure that does absolutely impossible things, you know, visiting all the children in the world and going down the chimney and all that other stuff, you know, in a sense, we run a risk of, well, maybe blowing a little of our credibility with our children when we talk about spiritual things, especially about Jesus. In fact, I've talked to a number of people who are atheists, and one of the things they'll throw on you is, well, isn't Jesus just a Santee for adults? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't work the same way. It's a nice myth to believe in, helps you sleep better at night. You can put together some of this circumstantial evidence, like presents under the tree. But isn't Jesus just like that? Well, I love it when people ask me that question, because Jesus isn't just like that. And being able to share the historical reality of his birth, death, and resurrection can be really an eye-opening thing. But having said that, you know, that one tradition can really distract, and it really does become more about Santa Claus than it does about Jesus. And I think that's something we really have to be careful of. I was certainly raised with that and, you know, certainly wanted to keep that tradition going as a kid as long as I could, even though I figured out that, very interesting, Santa Claus's handwriting looks just like my mom. but oftentimes it can create some cloudiness along that line. Randy Stonehill, the Christian singer, had a great line about this in his Christmas song For All Year Round. He said, I know that if St. Nicholas was here, he would agree that Jesus gave the greatest gift of all to you and me. So I think St. Nicholas would probably be hitting his forehead and going, oh, I can't believe they've associated me with this. So.
You want to add anything, Tammy?
Well, I see a certain amount of danger as a mother of four to introduce children to the concept of Satan's Claus. Sorry, Santa Claus. You can tell where my mind is.
That's all right.
And that is the fact that Santa Claus comes and gives gifts if you're naughty or nice. You know, if you're nice, you get gifts. If you're naughty, you get a lump of coal. Well, and that's not the way Yeshua works. Yeshua came because you're naughty. He came because we needed redemption. He came because there was no one else that could do that. His gift was freely given, and it doesn't matter what kind of a person you are. And so I agree with Scott wholeheartedly. There is a certain amount of danger in bringing this concept to your children because they can confuse it. And having gone through that, and my children were somewhat raised in the pagan, so they didn't, the two earlier ones didn't really associate with that. The two younger ones did more so than the two older ones. But so I got kind of a crossways on that. And then my mother, being the atheist that she is, wanted to introduce Santa Claus, so all the presents were signed by Santa Claus. And so it was a very interesting experience being a mother. As a kid, I grew up, and yep, mom's writing was definitely a lot like Santa Claus's. I would say if you're going to introduce that tradition like the Tooth Fairy or some of the others, be very, very careful to distinguish that between it and Yeshua and his gift to us, his precious gift.
I agree with that. And just the other thing I would add is if you're going to do it at all, I would do it strictly sharing with your children, this is a game we play. You know, it's mm-hmm. like any other game that we play. This is not real. This is just something fun that we do. And, you know, again, if you get kind of crossways with grandparents or others that want to have that tradition, I think sitting down and explaining that to your kids is going to go a long way. Because I guarantee it, one of the surest ways to destroy your child's popularity if they're in their early school years is to have them be the one going around class going, well, we know there's no such thing as Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So you don't want to dig the well deep for them. Just explain to them that it's a game that you play and it's something that you do that's fun, but it's not real. You know, it's not that we're really waiting for this person. You know, it's daddy dressing up or something like that, and you know, you can have fun with it. But we've just got to completely distinguish this from anything spiritual.
Yeah, something we do with my daughters is my daughter, she knows that Saint Nicholas was a real person, that Santa Claus is fictional just for fun, and that it's really all about Jesus. And, you know, we've been going over and over and over that every time the issue comes up. And, but at the same time, we're always just waiting for her. Cause like when everywhere you go, you're at the store or whatever, they see a little kid. Oh, have you been good? Santa Claus is watching you. And we're always waiting for her just to blur out, Santa Claus isn't real. But she's been very discreet so far. So I'm very proud of how discreet she's been, not destroying the, you know, fun of other kids. That helps you out, Jessica.
Yeah, I actually had one more question, too.
Okay, toss it in real quick, all right?
All right. Also in the Catholic Church, when I was watching this video on St. Nicholas, they actually had and said that they believed he was another version of Christ. And that's why they had worshipped him, and that's why they still, to this day, have a church in his name, and they still worship him. And I was wondering why. Why does that have to do with Christ? And then I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. You got an answer for that, Scott or Tammy?
I have no answer. I don't know anything about it.
Yes.
Well, what it does tie into is a doctrine called the veneration of the saints, which is practiced in the Roman Catholic Church, where saints are looked upon as intermediaries between God and man. You know, in other words, if you can get a few saints praying for you, well, if you can get a few people praying for you, that's a good thing. How about if we get a few people who are already in heaven praying for you? That's an even better thing. You know, obviously its greatest manifestation is the idea of Mary being a co-redemptrix with Christ, which is an entirely, thoroughly non-biblical concept.
Very
pagan,
though.
The idea of the dead somehow praying for the living or interceding for them is, I think, a very destructive teaching in that it shortchanges people from the fact that we do have Jesus at the right hand of the Father making intercession for us, Romans chapter 8 declares. The other thing it ties into is just even the doctrine of the Pope. The Pope is called the Vicar of Christ. The word vicar, we get our term vicarious from that. And essentially it refers to the idea of someone who speaks in the stead of or occupies the place in the stead of, in the place of Christ. And once again, I think this is a non-biblical distortion, putting a person into a role that God never intended them to be in. And I think some of this that you may have seen in this video about St. Nicholas, I don't think you'll run into any Roman Catholic who would say, yes, we worship St. Nicholas on the same par with God. But certainly they are. The Roman Catholic Church does teach prayer to the saints, and that is something we need to avoid.
All right, Jessica, well, thanks for joining us tonight. I hope that helps you out. And you have a Merry Christmas, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, you bet. Next up, we have John on the line. John, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man.
I'm glad to hear you guys having this conversation tonight. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. First of all, I just heard him mention that about Mary and her being a co co-redemptrix, I think. And he said that was totally non-biblical. And if what I'm hearing tonight with this stuff here tonight, if this is totally non-biblical, why do we keep it, number one? Secondly, reading Deuteronomy 12, 28 through 31, God said, observe and hear all these words which I command thee, that it may go well with thee and with thy children after thee forever. When thou doest that which is good and right in the sight of the Lord thy God, when the Lord thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them, and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them after that they had destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hateth have they done unto their gods, for even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. And I think about the little girl who called earlier who was talking about this, and I feel that that's exactly what has been done with her and myself when I was younger, growing up and put through the same things. We were being offered before these false gods as a means of accepting what we were taught as Christianity, which was, in fact, a lie. And, Tammy, I agree with you. Today I keep God's holy days and not the world's holidays.
I commend you for your courage and your wisdom, your insight, and I would ask you to remember to forgive, and I would ask you to consider very carefully alienation, because we do not want to alienate the people that, while at the same time we're serving God and we're observing God's days, it should be God's holy days, in my opinion, and I cannot speak for anyone else. In my opinion, we should observe God's holy days. If you're going to do that, don't alienate your brother just because he is a little bit different. Reach out to him and bless him, even though he may have a slightly different viewpoint.
Absolutely.
And you know, so far as the idea of God's holy days go, you know, every day is the day that the Lord has made. And so every day is pretty much a holy day. I mean, you know, we make a big deal about Sunday or Saturday or this or that or the other thing. And, you know, I agree. You know, there's certain days that are special, but really when you think about it, what is a holy day? The holy day is the day that the Lord has made, which is every day of the week. And, you know, yeah, there's times where you do special things for this, that, or the other thing, but, again, I don't know if the issue is it only on those certain days, or why can't it be every day? Again, is Christmas kind of an arbitrary celebration? I would say it's kind of an arbitrary celebration. And if it is arbitrary, then why can't we celebrate God whenever we want? I don't think there's anything hindering us in doing that.
We should.
Exactly. We got about 5 minutes left here. So, Brenna and Jason, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to get to your calls here tonight. Again, if you have questions that you'd like to email, you can email Tammy at TrapperTam at, what was the rest of it?
At Yahoo.com.
At Yahoo.com. And then Scott Richards has an email for his program. It's a what is your email? Scott Richards Live. What?
It's studio@scottrichardslive.com.
That's what it is. I work for your show. I should know that. But
yeah, it should be running through your sleep.
It should be. Scott, any closing comments tonight as we wrap things up?
Well, you know, once again, this time of year, there is a crisis of conscience that goes on. And I think the fact that people are wrestling with this is an awesome thing, because it means that people are attempting to live their lives in a biblical way.
Amen.
You know, I just go back to Romans 14 and verse 5, where the Apostle Paul said, one person esteems one day above another, another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. He who observes the day observes it to the Lord, and he who does not observe the day to the Lord, he does not observe it. And, you know, I just love that, because I tend to be in your camp, yo. Each and every day is the day that the Lord has made. Each and every day we can celebrate the fact that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. On Christmas, great opportunity for evangelism. I'm more than happy to seize it in the culture. In fact, the way our culture is running right now, I was in a convenience store this morning, and the clerk said to me, "Happy holidays." And I looked at her and I said, "You mean Merry Christmas?" And she looked at me and she looked depressed and she said, Yeah, I got in trouble for saying that earlier.
Oh, no.
And I looked around and I said, you know, there are a bunch of people there, and I said, well, let's just go for the jugular. I said, hey, everybody, happy Jesus birthday. And she laughed, and
you radical.
In the store laughed, and I never thought I would be a radical for Jesus by saying Merry Christmas. But if that's bugging people that are trying to extinguish the light and love of Jesus Christ, by all means, I think I'm going to be that kind of a contrarian radical this Christmas season. So
you're such a rogue.
This great time of year.
Way to go. Tammy, anything that you want to toss in here at the conclusion?
I appreciate both Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah, or Chappy Chanukka, or whatever you want to call it. Keep in mind, there are other holidays that Christians celebrate that are not necessarily pagan or not necessarily Christian in origin.
Easter.
Easter being one of them. St. Valentine's Day is questionable. Columbus Day is questionable. Well, not Columbus Day, St. Patrick's Day. That's what I was thinking of. Some of the Christian holidays that were originally Christian have been turned pagan. Some of the pagan holidays have been turned Christian. Either way, consult the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. Consult God. Talk to Him. Ask Him what's right. And do what He says. If celebrating Christmas is what He says is right for you, then do it. If doing something else is right for you, then do something else. If doing it every day is right for you, then do it every day. There was a gentleman that, when I was living in Florida, he was a very interesting man. Whenever we would go into a grocery store, we saw him there about once a week buying a bottle of olive oil. And we're like, okay, why are you buying a bottle of olive oil every single week? Do you just eat a lot of fried food or a lot of salads? And he walked up to me and he blessed me, and he attempted to do an anointing on me with the olive oil. So I knew what he was doing with the olive oil. To him, every day was a holy day. And that's wonderful. God created them, and it's God's days.
Well, I would have to toss in here at the end of the program, you know, the whole reason we do this program is so that you know stuff. I mean, I love knowing stuff. That's why I love working with Scott on his program. That's why I love talking with people like Tammy. I just love knowing stuff. Why? Because then I can determine for myself why I believe what I believe. And this time of Christmas, there isn't a whole lot of that. Like one of our earlier callers pointed out, people just celebrate stuff because that's what everyone's doing. One of the devotions I did earlier this week was talking about, you know, I was in a store and everyone's buying gifts, but no one looked happy about it. Mm. And I'm thinking, why are you guys buying gifts if you aren't happy about it? I'm pretty sure the Bible says that God loves a cheerful giver. And no, that's a verse for tithes and offerings. Like, no, I think that goes for anything that you're willing to give, including gifts at Christmas. So, you know, if you're just doing this because that's what people do, they go out and shop and buy gifts, well, then obviously we're missing the whole point. So I hope for those of you who are listening that what you got out of this is like, yeah, there's a lot of history behind Christmas. Pagan and Christian, there's this, there's that, these traditions came from here and there. The real question is, what do you believe about why you celebrate Christmas? And why do you believe why you celebrate Christmas? And if you can know that, well, it's good to know all this other stuff. But like, you know, Scott always points out from Romans 14, and like Tammy says, you know, we all have these places that we have to go, and it's really up between us and God. I love Christmas. I don't disguise that at all. I'm like you, Scott. You know, if I can tell someone happy Jesus' birthday, well, I'm happy to shout that out. And at the same time, I'm happy to go around wearing my Santa hat. And you know what? A lot of people see that as a contradiction. You just said happy Jesus' birthday, but you're wearing Satan Claus's hat. How can you do that? Because it's fun. It keeps my head warm, you know? It's stylish.
And he's wearing it right now.
And I've been wearing it the entire program. So
you radical.
I know. Well, you know, just to point out that Christians can be, you know, just as weird about this sometimes as anyone else. You know, all these people saying, oh, you got to get rid of those Christian symbols. Well, sometimes Christians are like, well, you got to get rid of all those commercial symbols. Get that Santa hat off. You can't wear that. Okay, you know what? God hasn't zapped me for it, so I think I'm okay. I don't think it bothers him. I'm sure Jesus won't mind if I wear it at his birthday party. The whole reason we celebrate this season is the birth of Jesus Christ, and that's really what it's about. It was an amazing gift that God gave us. You know, a lot of people were talking about this after our Christmas party. Sometimes people are like, oh, it's so inconvenient to give gifts because, you know, I got to remember all these people. And I'm pretty sure, you know, it was inconvenient for Jesus to come to earth as a man, but he didn't care because he loved us so much. And I think there lies the true heart of the season. Scott Richards from Scott Richards Live on our sister station, KNKT. Again, if you have more questions for him, you can always call into his program. He's always ready with an answer, or you can email him studio@scottrichardslive.com. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Scott. I really appreciate all that you contributed.
My pleasure. God bless you.
And Tammy Bergen, a very interesting individual who I've loved getting to know because of her background and now her present, being a former Wiccan and now celebrating Jewish holidays as a Christian.
Thank you.
And just a fascinating person to talk with. Again, I thank you for your perspective on this, and it's been a pleasure having you here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And again, TrapperTam at
Yahoo.com
if you have more questions for Tammy. Well, next week on Raw Talk, we're going to have a Christmas special for you as we celebrate the reason for the season. No Christmas trees, none of that. We're just going to talk about Jesus. And then New Year's Eve, it'll be kind of a party atmosphere around here as we look back on 2006 at all the things that God has done in your life and in our lives. We'll have several of the M88 DJs here, and we'd love to hear from you on New Year's Eve as we talk about 2006 and what we look forward to in 2007. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we really appreciate you listening. If you have something that you'd like to talk about next year, send us an email, studio@m88.org. Let us know what kind of topics you'd like to discuss in 2007. Until next week, have a shway week in the Lord.